Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. It's your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And this week we have Claudie with us. Now, usually I let my guests introduce themselves, but this is someone who is very near and dear to me. And I usually don't interact much with the guests ahead of time simply because I want to hear the story fresh, just like you in the audience. I have an overview of what they've been through, but I don't know all the details. In this case, I've known this individual almost all their lives, and I was privy to this process as it was unfolding. So first of all, I want to express how proud I am of you, Claudie, for sharing a story. And because I have been privy to the journey, I also want to just say I'm very proud of you for the radical ownership you've taken in your life and all that you have accomplished and all that I know you will accomplish. So, Claudie, tell us your story.
Hello, everyone. So I guess for the main part I wanted to share about needs just a little bit of context. So growing up, I had both parents in the home. But my relationship with my dad was like a little shaky in a sense that I guess because of his own upbringing, he didn't really know what being a father was. I guess didn't really know how to connect with me and my siblings on the level that, well, for myself, I'll speak for myself, on the level that I think I needed as a child. So it was spending time was like us going to his events and helping him to set up his equipment, and we're with him, but is it really like quality time? I don't know. And then I have some fond memories of connecting on films, and we all love Marvel and stuff like that. But I think like maybe the reassurance and the affirmation that I needed as a child, I didn't really get from him. And I got it from my mom, but it's, I don't know. I'm realizing for myself that it was just different. So growing up, I became a teenager, would have been like seeking attention from guys and I guess looking for, yeah, that affirmation from different male characters in my life. Very insecure as a teenager, probably quite a bit anxious, even though I wouldn't have been able to name it that back then. Always wanted to be accepted in different peer groups and like trying to fit in the best I could, but never quite being close, like super close with anybody, like friends with everybody, not close with like anybody in particular. And so fast forward to being a 15-year-old, started going to a church, and initially it was, I've been to church g growing up, but like this was my first time like understanding what everything was and experiencing the presence of God for the first time and all these very new experiences that I feel were help like very helpful. But then that's when the things would have started to come up about, whoa, actually, like I have issues of abandonment, like feeling abandoned, and starting to identify various insecurities and things that I had that I had in my life, but just hadn't ever known what it was. So these things start to come up as I'm going to church. And it's so hard to tell one story without like talking about my dad throughout. But at the church, the pastor was married to my cousin. And so going to the church more often, starting to get involved, start working like in the office as an assistant. And as I'm getting more involved, I'm getting closer to the pastor and I'm having conversations and end up sharing with him about my life and the things I'm experiencing, as you would do with the pastor, because they're like a leader, they're a guide, that's what they do. And, you know, I'm feeling encouraged, and like with all the different things coming up with abandonment and such, like it's nice to hear from someone or be around someone who can like kind of help walk me through this process of dealing with whatever insecurities or issues or feelings I've had that have come about as a result of my maybe lack of a relationship with my dad. And so just, and again, we have these things that happen, and like there's so much of about the whole progress that process that I have just forgotten about. But just over time, we get closer. A lot of people who are closest to the pastors are calling them mom and dad. So, you know, they invite me to also join in on that. So I'm calling him dad, I'm calling him mom. I'm going to their house after services and throughout the week sometimes just to hang out. And again, like I'm feeling like I'm in this inner circle and I'm getting to know them better, and everybody else in the church is like over there, and I'm feeling like I'm a part of the cool club. But, and here's where like I don't really know where the transition happened, but like the relationship with the pastor started to like slowly, I don't know, somewhere along the line it just started to transition into something else. And so it would be like text messages, like I'm having to message him every single day, like it's a part of my morning routine, like I have to message him, I have to say good morning, I have to keep in touch throughout the day. And I'm thinking to myself like, oh well, this, like I'm seeing him now as a father figure, and I'm thinking, oh well, this is just what it must be like to have a father figure. These are the things that are required. I have to keep in touch with him. I have to, you know, maintain contact and stuff like that. So continuing the contact, continuing messaging, speaking every day. And at the same time, I'm going to church. I feel like I'm growing. Like there's so much happening where, yeah, I'm learning, and then this relationship's going on at the same time. And so eventually, I don't even, I, again, couldn't tell you what the timeline was, but it like transitioned into, how would you feel about a kiss? And it's like, okay, like, you know, maybe feel a little bit uncomfortable with that because I'm still only like 15, 16, you know, just barely having my first experiences with guys as a teenager. But I was like, you know, but this again must be like a requirement of what it's like to have a father figure. So sure, I guess we'll kiss. And so like from that, then the text messages become a little bit more suggestive and like hints of like sexual things in there. And I'm again convincing myself that, okay, well, this just must be a requirement. And again, like still going to church, still growing. I'm in like different like junior leadership positions and starting to lead youth things and learning how to read my Bible, and his like initiating some of this stuff where it's like, this is how you study. And all, there was a time of like where I would play with my eyelashes and when someone's talking to me so that I don't have to look in your face. And he would make me like take your hands down and talk to me like face to face. And so he's teaching me how to communicate better with people. And so I'm learning, I'm growing, but at the same time, there's these little conversations and little like interactions that are happening over time. And just, I guess, over the period of maybe 3 years, it goes from, a little kiss here and there, an inappropriate text message here and there, to send me nudes. I want you to send me nude photos. And so I'm posing and taking pictures and sending them. And again, in my head now, this is all normal. Like 3 years in, this is somebody who I love. This is somebody. And it was such like, it's so weird because in my head, it's like, you're my pastor, you're my dad, but I also love you in a romantic way. But it was like all, I never saw us as having like a romantic relationship per se. It was just, this is just how our relationship is. I don't know. But so even thinking about, because he's married, he has children. I never in my head did it pass my mind that this was some kind of affair. Never went through my head that there was like, especially that far in, this is it's not a pro inappropriate. Like this is just normal. This is just how it's supposed to be. So yeah, it's gone from text messages kissing to now sending nude photos. It's gone to his staying at a hotel for the weekend and asking me to come to see him. And it's like turned very sexual. Like it was, yeah, it was a lot. But and then him asking me questions like, oh, what would you do if you got pregnant? Or what would you do if this happened? And I'm just like, well, obviously I'm loyal, so I'll stick it out. I'll stay with you. I'll do what I have to do. Or like whatever it is you want to do, like I'm on board kind of thing. Still like going to their house. Like there was a period of time where I lived with them for like 6 months. So I'm staying there with him and his wife and his children, and things are still happening in the house. But I am feeling like I'm closer to this person who is my father figure. I'm closer and I in this like safe space, and but also like close to this person who I very much so love, and just feeling like really privileged to be in that position. And as things go on, like I'm feeling like my life is connected to this person, and all sorts of plans are being made for the church that I'm now being included in for the future. And it's like, what? Like, now I feel purpose. Now I feel like, on top of being loved and taken care of, like, now I have a future because of this person. Wow. Like, how lucky of me. But then there's still all these little requirements of you still have to message me every day. And there were a couple times where I forgot to message or just didn't feel like it on a certain day. And then I'm getting ignored, and then I'm getting shut out, and then you can't come to our house anymore, and then I'm not sending you any messages, and then I'm feeling like I think what like one of the a memory that always sticks with me is like one of the times that I had gotten shut out, I was at home by myself, and like it had been hours since he had messaged me and just wouldn't message me, and I was like on my floor screaming and crying out to God, please help me to get back into his good graces. Please help me. I feel like my life is not nothing without him. If you would just give me one more chance, I promise I won't mess up this time. I'll stay consistent. Going hoarse, screaming and crying and begging for God to help me to be back in this guy's good graces. And yeah, like it was a few situations like that. And I just like the anxiety that it would give me to feel like this is going to fall apart and feeling like I need to do everything I can to make sure that it's all held together. Yes, it is such a weird time, I guess. But it really, oh, it really did a number, I guess, on like my brain, because it was just very confusing. And it got to a point where I think there was always a part of me that was like way in the back that was like, there's something wrong with this. But at the forefront, it was like, but my future, my relationship with God, my relationship with my friends and my family, like my career, everything about my life is tied to my relationship with this man. And so, yeah, that was pretty much how things were up until I went to school in California. And leaving, like, I was really like anxious about leaving Bermuda because that means leaving him, not being close to him. But I was like still determined, like, I'm still gonna stay in contact because my future is still connected to this person. And I remember I had joined a Christian club on campus and we were having like a little small group meeting. And I can't even remember what the topic was this day. It was like six of us in a little room. And for some reason, I shared this story. And they were like, "Do your parents know about this?" And I'm like, "Why would my parents need to know about this?" And they were like, "Claudie, like, this is really serious." And I'm still like, "What are you talking about?" But okay, if you say it's serious, then I guess I'll go share it with my mom. So I got on a Zoom call with my mom and my sister and basically tell them the whole story. And yeah, it from there it all just snowballed out of control because yeah, my mom was, as you can imagine, furious. And then is messaging the pastor and his wife, "What is going on and how have you allowed this to happen?" And they have meetings with the pastors and the police are involved and lies are told and nothing gets resolved. And he basically leaves Bermuda with his family. And that was that. There's no closure, there's no charge, there's no case, there's nothing. Because basically he says that we were of age and consented to all of it. And I'm in California with no control over any of the situation and still feeling like this is somebody who I need to protect. So it was very confusing from there. And I think because of how strongly my mom reacted to the situation, it made me, and I didn't realize this till 2 years ago, but because of her reaction to the situation, I think in my brain, I think I went, if she's that angry, then I need to be that angry. And so I took on this anger about the whole situation for like however many years after that, up until a couple years ago. And so anytime I hear anything about where he's from, it triggers me. I have dreams that trigger me. I see somebody who looks like him, it triggers me. I hear about the church, it triggers me. All these things trigger me. I don't want to see his face. I don't want to see the family. I don't want to see his wife. I don't want to see anybody because it all is. Yeah. But basically, yeah, for years after that, I just carried this anger. And it wasn't until maybe a couple years ago, was just like, I just got to a place of being fed up with feeling that way. And I think it was a combination of feeling angry about the church situation and him, and then also the plus the anger of everything that had got spiraled out with my dad at the same time, which is a whole other story. But yeah, I just got to a place of being fed up, and so I ended up going to therapy. And that was like going to therapy. Initially, a lot of it was about my dad, and then like maybe towards the end of me going, we started to talk about the church situation. But that was like the first time that I had to admit that it was abuse. Whatever had happened at the church was abuse. And like even more recently, like thinking about like talking about the situation with one of my friends, like having to, I guess, accept that there are even some of the sexual things that happened would be considered rape. And it all like just felt or feels still a bit like really big in my head where it's like abuse. I didn't get abused. I've seen people who get abused, and that's not what happened to me because I was like a lot of it I was going along with, a lot of it I felt loved and taken care of, and I felt like I was growing and I felt he cared about me and he wasn't like verbally abusive to me. He didn't beat me. What do you mean I got abused? yeah, so it took some time, some months for me to accept that word, to accept that I was taken advantage of, to accept that my vulnerability with having in like daddy issues basically was taken advantage of. And then, of course, later on, finding out that I wasn't the only one who was affected in the situation, that there were other girls from the church who had the same experience as me. I'm like, yeah, it was, it's been, it, yeah, it was difficult to accept words like abuse and rape and associate it with myself. And then later on, realizing the anger that I had been feeling all this time was not my anger. It was anger that other people were telling me that I needed to feel. And then realizing, actually, more than being angry, I feel really sad and disappointed about the situation because this is somebody who I trusted. This is somebody who I was looking at as a father figure. And maybe like I was placing unrealistic ideals on this person and what they were meant to be in my life. Getting to acknowledge that, like, actually, I don't really feel angry. I feel really sad and disappointed. More than anything, I feel sad and disappointed. And then having to reconcile and try to make a separation of through this situation, there are a lot of areas where I can say I really grew, and areas to this day where I'm like, if I never learned this, like I would probably struggle in certain social situations, or you know, it really helped me with my with studying in general, like studying my Bible, studying in general. But then also like this really bad thing happened where I was abused and taken advantage of by this person who also taught me these things. So like trying to reconcile in my head that both things could be true and not completely throw away all of it. That's been like, and it's still something that I think I go back and forth a bit within my head, but I'm probably a lot more like settled and settled on it within myself. But yeah, that's like the fast version of the whole story.
You brought up some very interesting points, right? So, first of all, a lot of people don't recognize that abuse does not happen outright. Sexual, financial, emotional, it doesn't happen outright. Usually, the person is groomed into a level of safety, and then things gradually increase because you allow yourself to be vulnerable with that person. The other thing that you recognize and you mention is you were seeking something that was missing. You grew up in a space where you wanted to be seen and loved by a father figure, and he was aware of that. So he took full advantage of the upper hand that he felt like he had. And, you know, I said at the beginning of this episode, you know, I was privy to things unfolding. I know how angry your mother was. I mean, furious. And her anger was also rooted in a lot of pain because, as your mother, her role is to protect you. And, you know, I don't want to speak too much for your mama, but you know, her and I are very close. And to see how things have unfolded for you as a result of the way that you have processed and given yourself grace to process has been phenomenal. When I talk about survival mode and exiting it, it really does come down to this point where we really got tired. And it's not just, I'm not tired of just the residual impact of the trauma that I'm experiencing. I'm tired because I recognize that I'm stuck. And one of the things that was a residual impact for you was your ability to like genuinely socialize, right? You kind of withdrew. And I want you to explain how much you've worked on that element of your life because while you were in survival mode, like that was really perhaps a trigger point for you.
Oh. I would say that that whole situation made me an extremely socially anxious person. And so constantly in any interaction with a person, with a group of people, overthinking what do they think of me? What are they thinking of me? Are they gonna like me? And I would say I became a people pleaser, but a people pleaser in the sense that I want to do everything in my power to make sure that you keep liking me. And so I guess it meant that I would put on like a version of myself for people that was very likable, that was very smiley, that was like that didn't show pain or sadness or weakness. I was like, I want to be the funny person in the room, but then equally like having to step into a social situation that I'm not familiar with was for a long time like terrifying. And I feel like I kind of, from the moment I was in California up until not now, but like a couple years ago, was just like on a steady decrease where it just got worse and worse, to the point where I am the person standing in the far corner of a room and kind of like, you know, I'll just rather look. Or if someone comes up to me unexpectedly and I haven't had time to prepare the conversation in my head, then I'm just gonna stare at you and maybe say something really awkward and not related to the conversation. I'm listening to respond rather than actually listening to hear what you're saying and telling me. But I've always had a desire to get past that. So I think that's why I would have continued to put myself in different social situations. But I think it was most evident when I moved in with friends in now that I'm in Eng with sorry now that I'm in England, moving in with friends, and we're all getting close and we're in very close proximity to each other. So I can't hide these things from them 24/7. It just comes out eventually, and seeing how that would have caused like little points of tension, or you know, where, let's say, for example, we plan an event for next Saturday, and it comes up to that, and I'm like, suddenly, you know what? I really don't want to go to this anymore. And then it became like a point of frustration between me and my friends, where we've made these plans weeks in advance, but because of my social anxiety and not wanting to put myself in that position, I'm gonna drop out very last minute, and now you're angry at me because I'm inconsistent. And gosh, yeah. And so it wasn't until I started going to therapy, and me thinking this is just part of my personality, this is just how I am, there's nothing I could do about it. And they're eventually, if I can't maintain this line of like I can't drop out all the time, but then that means I go out and I'm miserable the entire time we're out. Yeah, so it wasn't until I started going to therapy that it started to be pointed out like this trauma that you're talking about is what has caused this. This feeling of like you constantly needing to make sure you are in people's good graces is directly linked to you feeling like your life is connected to this man over here who would ignore you if you didn't speak to him every day. And so then that trans, yeah, that I recognize, whoa, that has like directly translated into how I interact with the people who are close to me. So now I feel like my whole world is falling apart if I feel like I haven't messaged you often enough. And then even in dating, like I'm single at the moment, but like any times before where I would have tried dating, I'm like, do I need to message you every day? If I don't message you every day, are you gonna think I'm not interested? Are you gonna ignore me? Are you gonna And I'm feeling very anxious and like I need to make sure that I'm doing everything right and need to make sure that I'm in control of the situation, or else it all falls apart and now I've lost someone else and they're looking at me in a bad way. It forced me to communicate more. And I feel like I've gotten really, really good at communicating my thoughts. And in these situations, the reason I would have stood back here is because of X, Y, and Z. In this situation, the reason why I wanted to drop out of this event is because of X, Y, and Z. And you know what? Actually, I like realized I don't know, that I just, some in social situations, I guess, I needed to start to practice being okay, like practice like accepting that I am okay and I am actually really amazing and people do want to be around me and I actually am like fun. And but there are times where I do feel really drained and that's also okay. And so learning to distinguish me just fully running away from a situation that I feel uncomfortable with versus actually I need to recharge, but always being able to put that into words. I remember when I first got out here, as it relates to like conversation with people and feeling awkward, like I like before I used to hate awkward silences in a conversation. I went on YouTube and I was like, how to have a natural conversation with someone, like literally having to learn again how to interact with people. And like things like that would have really helped me to overcome my like anxiety little by little. And I would say even within this last year, like where I am right now is definitely the most confident that I have felt about myself being in a room full of people. Like today I went to an event where I knew only one person, but I went table to table, I introduced myself to people, and I didn't feel that same anxiety of, are they gonna like me? It's like I've gone into a room now thinking, I'm a very likable person and I am intelligent and I have things to offer. And here I am, world. And like seeing how that changes then how people respond to me, it feels really good. But it's taken a lot of practice, like intentional practice and speaking to myself, because it's very easy for my brain to that to go back to, are you sure? Did you notice how that person kind of changed how they act towards you? Are you sure that's not them? Like, you know, and yeah, constantly talking to myself and reminding myself that like I'm not in this situation anymore. These people are not that person. These people love me. They actually love me. They care about me. I love myself way more. It's a process, but I love myself and I value myself. And so yeah, like I've just put a lot of practice and time into the way I communicate and the way that I just show up, and just yeah, a lot of pushing myself out of my comfort zone.
I love it all. So one of the things that I talk about on this podcast is like the three phases that we go through in order to exit survivor mode. And you've actually mentioned the in a roundabout way, right? So the first one is awareness. We can change what we can't see. And for you, it was the reconciliation that you were actually abused. You know, you were not at fault in any way, but you were taken advantage of, you were groomed, and that incident was a resulted in the way that you showed up. So that awareness. The second phase is reprogramming. So being able to change the narrative, being able to take power of your thought processes and ownership of yourself in the in that way. And you talked about that with how you've actively worked to navigate your social anxiety that came as a result of the trauma that you've experienced. And then the last phase is a reinvention, being able to change or adapt to a new version of you that isn't aligned or doesn't identify solely with the trauma that you've experienced, right? Like now you are confident walking into rooms. You're not in that space needing to people please because you recognize that I don't need to do that here in order to be liked. You spoke about the hypervigilance, right? And that comes as a direct result of trauma. Like you then start analyzing to the core the smallest changes in people's reactions and actions to you. So yeah, this is why these conversations need to happen because a lot of people, it wasn't until you got into therapy and this was years later that you even recognize the level of trauma that you had experienced. We often don't recognize the residual impact of our trauma. Dan, you even said, I thought this was my personality. It wasn't. It's you were changed in the process. You know what I mean? And that is why, listeners, I I'm so adamant about this podcast because there are so many people who have been through similar stories and don't even recognize that they are living as half a shell of themselves simply because of how they've processed the trauma and how they now think they need to act as a result of the trauma. You spoke about you compartmentalize things. We talked about it before we even started recording. I kind of forgot because our brain is really good with protecting us and keeping us quote unquote safe. I really enjoyed listening to you, and you know how proud I am of you for sharing your story. If you could leave the audience with one key takeaway, what would it be?
Oh, so I did think about this before I wrote it down. So basically that there's no formula for healing. And for myself, like thinking about how it's happened over time and it's happened in fragments. And there were times where it was just like a very little thing that I was able to acknowledge and move past. And then there were times where it was like a huge chunk that was like, whoa, like big epiphany and made a significant difference in how I was able to move forward. But again, it all happened over time. Yeah, there's no 1 + 1 = 2. It's a combination of a lot of things that goes into healing, and it just takes time, and you have to be so patient with yourself with allowing things to happen as they would, but also balancing that with like, how can I be intentional in this moment to work on this thing that's at the forefront right now? And I feel like, yeah, it's those things, those moments that really like just kept me moving forward. And like, there's always something new to discover about yourself, you know? But one, have to be very patient. Two, have to be intentional about like so many things that you do to heal. But then sometimes it's just things that naturally pop up over time.
Yeah, audience, healing is messy, and you have to give yourself some grace. You have to give yourself some time. This is not instant gratification, which is why I often say there is no such thing as healed. It's a journey. It's a journey. Well, excuse me. It's a journey that you have to be willing to undergo. Because at every level, no matter how long it's been, at every level, there will be new challenges. And if you don't have the patience and you don't give yourself grace, it will end up being a lot messier than it needs to be. So thank you, Claudie.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much for coming on today and sharing your story. Audience, thank you again for listening and catching another episode of Survivor Mode Disrupted. And I want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built just to survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.